Hello, this is Susan Smith Nash, and you're listening to the Fringe Journal. The Skin and Bone Bags We Were Born Into. This is the name of a story that's a part of the Adventures of Tangley Carrere, so I hope you enjoy it. The Skin and Bone Bags We Were Born Into. My skin and bone bag is looking even worse than ever, said Tangley Carrere to her dad, the proud proprietor of a small independent oil and gas exploration and production company. He was reviewing a set of maps on their latest oil and gas prospect and marking it with yellow highlighter, where they still needed to lease the subsurface rights. It was small and high risk, just like all of Dad's prospects. He was a wildcatter all the way. Tangley continued, My face looks haggard. I'm getting fat. Worst of all, I'm getting fat in all the wrong places. You don't have anything to worry about. How would you like to be like me and have to look in the mirror every morning, said Dad. The clock just runs one way, forward. It's the stress, said Tangley. It's tough to help you with your crazy wildcatting. They were having coffee at Marvetta's Cafe, a small country diner on State Highway 99, on the way to the most depleted oil and gas field in Okefuskee County. Marvetta Cafe's best and only morning waitress smiled. She was small and cheerful, but emanated a rather unwholesome energy, possibly due to dawn-to-midnight coffee and lard-based gravy ladled over lard-riddled biscuits. Yep, it's pretty ridiculous to be all uppity and prideful about one's body. You get what you were born into. You have what you have, the waitress said. Her lips were wrinkled around the edges like all longtime smokers. She was thin, and her skin looked like a wet apartment body stocking about two sizes too big. Pour me another cup, please, Jo Beth, said Tangley, reading the, Hi, I'm Jo Beth, tag affixed to the crisp white waitress blouse. I'll take an order of biscuits and gravy. Torpedoes be damned. I'm giving my skin and bone bag some pleasure while I still got a skin and bone bag to trot about. Dad looked rueful. Look at my daughter. All that food. And all about the food. Promise her a warm bed, full water bowl and dog dish, and she'll follow you anywhere, said Dad. Tangley was surprised Dad would say this. It was not like him. Plus, she was quite adept at keeping her water bowl and dog dish nice and full. She did not need any help with that. Mixed metaphors, dogs, skin and bone bags, everything, nothing. What do you do? Yep, no doubt. My skin and bone bag is even looking even worse than usual these days, thought Tangley. If someone else had said it, I would have smiled, thought Tangley. She loved poking fun at the hubris of anyone who took credit for beauty, athletic prowess, skin color, and cognitive pizzazz. Ha, hubris. Don't we all know that it's just a matter of the skin and bone bag we happen to be born into? Nature versus nurture? Yeah, they matter. But by and large, the factors that affect both nature and nurture are totally luck of the draw. What skin and bone bag were you born into? Well, whatever it is, live with it. Sigh. We get used to our particular skin and bone bags. Eventually, we figure out how to work them. We learn how to get the maximum benefit from them. We learn just what everything takes. Good grief. This looks like we're going into a conversation about aging, illness, passages. I don't want to think about that. We all go through it. I have a friend who has convinced herself that passages must not be such a bad thing. After all, every person who is born has to die. So why should dying be any more traumatic than being born? Of course, some people are dying even as they are born. At least that's what right-to-lifers would have you think. I personally think that no one is born until they take their first breath. I know that's ethically problematic, but it's easier to measure, easier to deal with. I hate to think that all the women who have been forced into abortions, either by cultural, economic, or political exigencies, are going to go to eternity as murderesses. It's just not possible. Nature is harsh. Human practices are equally so. If we take the right-to-life approach, we could stand back in amazement and horror as a gardener weeds her garden. If we take this logic to an extreme, we could see problems with pesticides and herbicides as well. And finally, we could take a look at culling as something horrendous, heinous, heart-wrenching. That's the way it is. birth, death, cycles, eternal return. These are the words that self-juxtapose in my mind. And then, of course, the narrative of eternal return, the apocalyptic narrative. I'm sick of it. You'd think that everyone else would be equally sick of it. I mean, what's so seductive about the end of the world as we know it, and the reconquista, the reordering of the world, in the image of those who have the forbearance to stick around and do the redefining and defining? What's so seductive about mass death followed by mass reanimation? I used to like the cycles. They fit nicely with the myth of the eternal return. Now the whole kit and caboodle, as they said in my grandparents' generation, just seems tiresome. Ha! It's endless. The apocalyptic narrative has a built-in self-destruct mechanism. Sadly, we're foolish enough to apply that internal built-in self-destruct narrative into everything we build and onto which we depend for our profit, our prosecution of wars, our progeny, and our pride. Yeah, that's it. Keep it going. Ha! I think not. Nice to be addicted, isn't it? Adrenaline junkies. Does that explain it? No. We are closure junkies. It's ugly. So we plaster virtually everything we do or create with a narrative that, well, really never ever fits. Think of an artist crunking in paint on canvas. Think of sloppy, thick brush strokes. No, think of a palette knife. That artist slathers on the paint like lashings of clotted cream. Oh yes, those thick globs of paint are sweet, but they're also messy and all too sweet, sour. I'm just saying that to let you know, the apocalyptic narrative has become a brush with way too much paint, a palette knife loaded up with ugly pigment to be applied in big ugly globs on a canvas we call our life. No. Stop it. Our lives are too delicate, with thin threaded lace for structure. It's just not fair to slam down the 20-ton narrative, apocalypse, on the fragile scaffolding we've erected and which we've started to call consciousness. This life has too much imbalance. It's like throwing a shot put into a flower bed filled with tiny, delicate leaflings and new blooms, having a 16-pound ball of iron fall right on top of the fresh jonquils. I don't know what else to say. I must stop. Forgive me as I weep. I'll have the same thing that Tang Li's ordering, said Dad. That meant biscuits and gravy. Are you sure that's what you want? Think about sodium, your cholesterol. Tang Li realized the hypocrisy in her words, but continued to speak. Jo Beth winked at Dad. Tang Li's face flushed. She felt annoyance, but decided not to respond. It wasn't worth it. After all, it was all in fun. Was it the waitress's fault she wasn't invited to play the same game? Live it up. Gather ye rosebuds, as they say. Carpe diem. In the parking lot, a truck backfired. A flock of starlings squawked, left droppings on whatever lay below. A cloud passed over the sun. The shadow passed quickly. They were hungry. Well, I hope you've enjoyed this. This is Susan Smith Nash, and you've been listening to an installment of The Adventures of Tang Li Carrier. Thank you for listening. Tune in again soon. Thanks.